Good afternoon, everyone. It's 1:30, and we have to get started. Thank you all for coming on this wonderful, sunny August day. Beautiful weather we're having these days. We have a quorum, so we can get started with the regular business. The first item on the agenda is the minutes of the May 18th meeting. I would entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved. Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed can say anything else. The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is staff reports. Mr. Segedy on the financial progress report.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Mr. Chairman. The financial progress report was attachment 3A in the folders at the door. It does take us through June 30th, which was the end of fiscal year 2011. So this is our, you know, kind of end of year financial report to see where we stand. Pleased to report that we're looking very good on the overall staff budget. We utilized 81% of the funding in that year period, and we do have 6 months to carry over funds before they are lost to the area. So I anticipate we'll be able to spend the overage, and our financial house is in good order otherwise, and I would ask for your consideration of a motion.
So moved. I have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further questions for Jason? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Ayes have it. Motion passes. Thank you. Jason, you're on again with the technical progress report.
Okay, thanks again. Just a couple things to report on the technical progress report. I'm currently vice chairing, as many of you know, the Northeast Ohio Sustainable Communities Consortium. That process is starting to get underway. A program office to manage that grant was formed, and because there was some empty office space, they actually are going to be right next door to AMAT. So that's a nice thing for working with that process, and I'll bring more information as I have it available. It's still kind of ramping up, but I think one of our plans is to look at the overall efforts, looking at how do we become a more sustainable region economically and infrastructure-wise, and there are going to be a variety of work streams put together, one focusing on housing, one on transportation, one on land use and urban design, one on economic development, and one on the environment. So if you or any of your staff would be interested in participating, don't hesitate to give me a call or shoot me an email, and I'll hook you up with the appropriate people. One other thing to report, the summary file 1 of the U.S. Census just came out. That's the first large-scale census release down to the block level. So I just wanted to mention that, too, if any of your communities are interested in having any geographic information system analysis done, any mapping or data processing or analysis, staff is more than glad to do that for you. Again, just give me a call or send me an email, and we'll try to analyze the census results however you would like us to. Transportation bill in Washington is I think we all were paying a lot of attention back around the 1st of August with the whole debt ceiling debate. There wasn't really any talk about any of the other federal programs, including transportation, so I don't really have anything new to report on that. That's still kind of on the back burner. And then finally, I mentioned this at the TAC meeting, but we're continuing now that we do have a website and it's been up for almost a year, we're continuing to kind of tweak, not necessarily how it looks, but more how it functions. So if there's information that you can't find or you think should be on that site, don't hesitate to let either Curtis Baker or Heather Rydell of my staff know about that. Also, if you have any questions on how to find something up there, or there's information you'd like to see, again, please don't hesitate to let us know. And with that, I think that was all I had to report.
Any questions for Jason?
Well, thanks, Jason. With the census, is there going to be a review of the federal aid system then?
Yeah, that's going to be coming up. I think that's one of the next steps. We usually wait until the census, which they're working on this right now, comes out with new urban area boundaries. And that's where we just kind of reassess if there are any new communities we need to bring into the MPO. But as soon as the urbanized area boundaries come up, then we start to go through the process of working with ODOT to adjust the federal aid system. And that's also something, if there is a big change in land use or development or anything like that, and a community wants to request to have us reevaluate part of it, we're glad to do that. I know we did that for the Goodyear development with some of the changes in the road network.
Anything else for Jason? Thanks, Jason. Next item on the agenda is the status of the AMAX sub-allocated federal funds. It's item 3C in your package. Mr. Bartison.
Thank you. Both the Federal Highway and Transit Administrations have approved our fiscal year 2012 through 15 TIP. That became active July 1st, which was the beginning of fiscal year 2012. If you haven't by now, every member will receive a copy, a hard copy of the TIP. And then, of course, that's also on our website. And as we do amendments to the TIP, we'll update the website. Fiscal year 2012 project cost increases, we do this on an annual basis. We're looking at the fiscal year 12 projects right now. Those that are eligible, there's a one-time 15% increase. And we're going through right now and contacting the sponsor to see if they have a revised estimate for their projects. So what we'll do is basically just update our funding program and balances table with the new amounts. And you will not have to do formal TIP amendments because this falls underneath the threshold of funding amount to have to do one. So in other words, you'll just see on this table the increases as they happen throughout the fiscal year. And then looking at our table, this shows fiscal year 12 through 15, and looking down at the bottom in the fiscal year 12 column, the carryover balance, which is the fourth figure up from the bottom, $17 million. That's what was carried over from fiscal year 2011. Of course, that's a lot larger than usual, and that's not something we want to see. I'll get into a little bit more detail about that on a different agenda item, but that's what was carried over from 11. And then you can see the balances throughout the remaining 4 years of the TIP. And we have a little bit over $10 million available for as part of the new projects at the end of 2015. Anybody has any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Any questions for Victor? Thank you, Victor. See you again shortly. Item 4, under old business. Item A, discussion regarding the Ohio Turnpike. For second year back on.
Okay, thanks again. This item was more to just have a general discussion and give all of you an opportunity to react to what you heard when Director Jerry Ray from ODOT came out to talk to us about the proposal to lease the Ohio Turnpike. Just a little bit by way of background for those that might not have been at the last meeting. At our May meeting, the staff had prepared a resolution opposing the sale or lease of the Ohio Turnpike based on an analysis which we had done, and it was the feeling of this committee at this time that really didn't have enough information to make that determination, so that resolution was tabled, if and when there was more information for AMATS to take a solid position on that. And Tony Uranker, the District 4 Deputy Director, was good enough to talk to us a little bit more about what Governor Kasich and the department were thinking about, and he had offered to have Director Jerry Ray from ODOT come to our region in June to talk to elected officials and also the staff about that proposal. So he was as good as his word, and I know he came out and talked to a lot of you, also talked to me and some members of my staff about the proposal, did the same with our neighboring MPOs such as NOAACA up at Cleveland, and Jerry Ray had come to the NOAACA Summit, which is their version of our annual luncheon, as well, to talk a little bit about the lease proposal. We did also talk a little bit to ODOT officials up at NOAACA in a meeting of the four MPOs that were affected, AMATS, TMACOG, which is the Toledo MPO, Eastgate and Youngstown, and, of course, AMATS. And And talking to the folks from ODOT, I think ODOT's idea is to explore the idea of leasing the turnpike. They haven't made any firm decisions on it yet. They're currently in the process of putting a request for proposals, request for qualifications out to consultants to look at some of the feasibility issues, particularly how much revenue would a lease bring in, how long of a lease would it have to be, what types of maintenance agreements and so forth would be appropriate for such a lease. The only comment I really made to ODOT at the time in talking to their staff that had come up from Columbus was just that I felt that it was understandable why people might be a little bit leery of the idea because it hasn't been tried before, and that there's obviously some degree of uncertainty inherent in getting into a lease agreement. I think my personal feeling is still that I'd like to see the department pursue equally in the feasibility study the idea of maybe turning the turnpike over to ODOT but having it stay as an asset that the state would control, and maybe even exploring privatization of things like the toll collection. So I think that will probably be looked at as part of their overall proposal. It sounds like they're going to try to do a pretty comprehensive analysis. And really with that, I just wanted to give all of you an opportunity, if you wanted to discuss it further amongst yourselves, to react to what you heard, and also give District 4 an opportunity if there was anything new to add into the conversation about it. So with that, I'll turn it back to the chair for discussion.
Any comments or questions at this point on the turnpike discussion? None? Okay, let's move on to the next items. Leaving old business, going into new business, connecting community planning grant program. Ms. Rydell.
Good afternoon. I'm discussing attachment 5A, which includes our NOFA as well as our summaries of last year's grant recipients. As you recall, the Connecting Communities Planning Grant program began as a pilot program in 2010. The first grants were awarded to the Village of Richfield, as well as Metro RTA and the City of Akron jointly. Both planning grants have begun the study process and should be complete near year-end this year. With that, it's now time to prepare for our next round of funding for the planning grant program. As a reminder, the funding for the planning grant program comes from a surplus in Akron's Federal Consolidated Planning Grant Fund. Similar to last year, applications will be made available on our website September 1st with a due date of October 14th. At that time, the task force will once again need to review the applications and make recommendations to all of you. You will have the opportunity to approve of the recommendations at your December 7th policy committee meeting. The Connecting Communities Task Force was established last year and consists of the following: Mayor Al Bolas, City of New Franklin; Jim Bowling, City of Kent; Jeff Pritchard, City of Streetsboro; Brian Smith from Parta; Dave Whited, Metro Park serving Summit County; Nick Lotzenheiser, Summit County, Ohio Public Works District 8 Liaison; Dave Gasper, City of Akron; Fred Guerra, City of Cuyahoga Falls; Chris Miles, Portage County Commissioner; and our Director, Jason Segedy. We are very excited for this second round of funding. As always, please feel free to contact me if you have any questions, and at this time I can take any questions that you have.
Questions for Heather? Thank you, Heather. Okay, item B, announcing the availability of project funding from the Surface Transportation Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality Enhancement and Resurfacing Program. Mr. Bodison, attachment 5B in the package.
Thank you. Every 2 years we go out for a round of funding or in our core funding programs, and our TAC TIP subcommittee is charged with the responsibility for initiating this process as well as discussing any issues that have to do with our funding. So they met back in July, and one of the things they discussed regarding the funding was the available funding, and one of the things that pertain to that is our carryover balances. As we've seen in the funding program balances under item 3C, that we had a very large balance, and it came from fiscal year 2011. As you know, ODOT gives us 50% more funds than they're required to, but yet we continue to have these large carryover balances. And the reasons for that is that basically twofold. One is that a lot of times we would schedule these projects and then they get delayed, moved into another fiscal year, and then also we get money returned because of low bids. And just for example, in fiscal year 2011, we had over $9 million worth of projects that were delayed and $4.5 million that was returned to us because of low bids. Of course, the low bids we can do nothing about. The delayed projects, we're going to have to do something about that. Again, we're getting more funds than ODOT has to give us, and yet we're carrying over the money. So it's making it look like this area doesn't need the funds, and I'm sure we all know that we do need the funds in this area, so we just need to do a better job in spending those funds. About this time last year, we had a balance, beginning with fiscal year 2011, about $2 to $3 million, and then we ended up carrying over $17 million because it was all said and done. So the subcommittee discussed solutions to this problem. One of the things they discussed is to continue to have, of course, our quarterly project review meetings and to continue to stress to the sponsors that these projects need to be delivered in the years of their program. We also talked about trying to avoid having projects scheduled in the fourth quarter. If those get delayed by a month or two, that could put them in the next fiscal year, and that's what gives us, contributes to our large balances. And then as pertaining to this new round of funding and available funding, the recommendation from the subcommittee was to over-program by 20%. And what that would translate into is $53 million available for new projects under the STP, CMAC, Enhancement, and the Surfacing Programs. This would be, the bulk of that funding would be available in fiscal years 2016 and 2017. But there would also be some funding available in the earlier years of TIP, and those are usually for the resurfacing projects or projects that have been applied for. One of the other issues they discussed was the resurfacing program. The recommendation is to increase the available funds for this program to 35% instead of the usual 20% of the annual STP allocation. The reasons for doing this is these projects, these resurfacing projects, take little time to develop and sell. Usually they're sold within the first or second year of the TIP. And these will help reduce the large balances that we do have in the early years of TIP. And of course, these are relatively low-cost projects, which means the local share is more affordable to more communities. If you look at our four funding programs, this is the one definitely, this program has the most diverse and greatest number of sponsors. In other words, the funding reaches more communities through this program. So by increasing the funding to it, this would help spread out the funds to more people and help the region as a whole. And of course, it's that time when those funds are most needed. They did take a look at the funding policy guidelines. These were pretty extensively reviewed and revised in our last round of funding. So at this time, they're not recommending any changes to the funding policy. They recommend that we just use it as it is. So the recommendation then would be for this committee to initiate a new round of funding. We'd over-program by 20% and more than is expected to be available through 2017, which again is $53 million. Fund the resurfacing program at 35% of the annual STP allocation instead of the normal 20%. And both the staff and the TIP subcommittee recommend this approval. And then if this is approved, what we would do next is simply, hopefully by even next week, you'd get a letter notifying all of our members of the available funds. And in that letter, we'll have the details of how much funding is available in each of the four funding programs. We'll have an updated project selection process included with the letter. And basically, we would be looking at the applications and scoring them throughout the fall and winter, and then hopefully we'd have
a list of projects recommended to be recommended for funding early next calendar year. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
What would be the 35% annual allocation?
I think it came out to almost $8 million for 2 years, so
$4 million
per year.
What's the plan for the 20% overage? Are they going to slip a year and get back in the mix, or they just drop off the radar? So if we over-program, what happens?
Well, as you can see, what generally happens is projects get delayed anyway. So the idea is having a bigger pool of projects to work with to help fill in those gaps, and we'll just work with them as they come along.
So once a project's approved, even though it's part of the 20% overage, it would still stay in the mix till we have done.
Well, we'll try to meet any project that could deliver, the year that they could deliver it. What we could do if we don't have enough funding in that specific year, so we could do a trade with another NPO. There's enough funding out there for that.
And Gene, maybe just to follow up on that, what we definitely will do is if they get approved for funding, we're committing to funding that project. So like Victor said, if we have to shift things around in the program, we can do that. We do have the option, like he mentioned, of trading with another MPO. And I think, frankly, when we talked to the subcommittee level, we talked about how that would be a great problem to have. And I personally don't think we probably will even run into that situation. The other wild card maybe is that our funding levels may even be reduced in the new transportation bill. Because that seems to be the talk. If and when that bill is ever passed, then we might have to get the subcommittee together again just to talk about what does that mean for our program. But we have been thinking about it.
Any other questions for Victor? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve staff's recommendation on this item.
Second.
Then we have a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. And the motion passes. Thank you very much. Okay, next on the agenda is the Traffic Crisis 2008 through 2010 Technical Memorandum. It's attachment 5C in your package. Mr. Poulet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to discuss attachment 5C in your packet, 2008-2010 traffic crashes in the AMATS area. During my presentation today, I'm going to look at some crash trends in our area. We're going to look at some areas of special concern. Review the criteria for a high crash location, see which intersections and sections were at the top, and then I'll highlight some ODOT safety programs that you may be interested in knowing more about. Traffic crashes are the leading cause of death for children and young adults ages 5 through 34 years old. Aside from the emotional cost, in Ohio, a fatality is estimated to cost $1.2 million, and a serious injury costs $84,000. So that's there is a cost associated with a traffic crash, and that's aside from the emotional stress. Unfortunately, from 2009, traffic crashes increased slightly, almost 3%. I account that to probably a few more vehicle miles traveled in the last year, and also perhaps some better reporting from communities, because the last crash report we did, I discovered some communities that were having some reporting problems. Injuries are also up slightly, about 300 more injuries from the last year, and fatalities actually decreased by one. So once again, some slight increases, but overall, the trend is still downward. Just hopefully, you know, that'll turn around again. Some areas of special concern that I'd like to touch on, and every crash is really a special concern, but these types of crashes seem to be increasing and seem to have a higher severity than the rest of them. Those are crashes that involve motorcycles, pedestrians, bicycles, and crashes resulting from distracted driving. Motorcycle crashes are up in our area, they're up nearly 6%. And there were 825 crashes, 605 of those resulted in injuries and 28 in fatalities. Motorcycle crashes were only 2% of the total crashes, but they accounted for 22% of all the fatalities in our area. Pedestrian crashes have also increased. They're up over 7%. 572 pedestrian-related crashes with 467 injuries and 18 fatalities. Once again, the ratio here is they were 1% of all crashes, but they accounted for 14% of all fatalities. Bicycle crashes increased nearly 13%. Fortunately, not a lot of fatalities, only one fatality from bicycle-related crashes. But as you can see in each of these types of crashes, there's a lot of injuries, and that's something of concern. And then distracted driving. This is hard to chart or hard to measure. Distracted driving is really any activity that you do while driving that, that takes your attention away from that function. There's basically three types of distracted driving: visual, manual, and cognitive. And the reason that we hear so much about texting and cell phones is, especially texting, involves all three types of distraction. And even though it's hard to measure, it's estimated that nationwide, 20% of injury crashes and 16% of fatalities involve distracted driving. High crash criteria. For a roadway section to be on the list, it has to have 10 crashes per mile per year and a crash rate of at least one. And for an intersection to appear on that list, it has to have a minimum of 10 crashes in a three-year period and also a crash rate of one. Once we come up with the locations, then we rank them by a composite score. Composite score takes into account number of crashes, crash rate, and severity. And we use a composite score because it's a more balanced approach to ranking a location. There were 118 highway sections that made the list, and that is down from 134 last time. Highway sections are listed in Table 1 of your attachment. And the top five were Canton Road from the Akron South Fork Line to Triplett Boulevard, State Route 44 in Rootstown Township from Talmadge Road to I-76, East Main Street in Kent from Willow to Luther, West Exchange Street in Akron from Rhodes to Dart, and Manchester Road in Akron from Carnegie to Waterloo. There were 265 intersections that made the list. This number is also down from 281 in the last crash memo. This is Table 2 of your handout. And the top five this time was South Broadway and East Thornton Street in Akron, Darrell Road and Graham Road in Stowe, State Route 14 and State Route 88 in Ravenna, Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard for State Route 59 in North Howard and Main Street in Akron, and Cleveland Maslin Road and Greenwich Road in North. Freeways are analyzed by the state. They analyze the whole system across the whole state. Unfortunately, at the time of my report, they were still completing that analysis, so that will be posted on the website when we do get it. Fortunately, we live in a state that's very safety proactive, and not only with providing data, but also with providing funding to help you fix areas where there's a safety problem. Probably the most popular program that ODOT has is the Traditional Highway Safety Program, or the HSP program. They still fund around $72 million annually. It's for any public road, doesn't have to be a state highway. Applications are taken at the end of April and September. The funding can be used for studies, right-of-way, engineering, or construction. And usually the match is 90-10, so usually you only have to match this funding 10%. Another popular ODOT program is the High-Risk Rural Roads Program. This is a program that targets roads that are functional class 7, 8, and 9. And this program is set up not because there's more crashes on these type of highways, but because there's more fatalities per crash. And that is because usually speed and bad road design is involved. So this is also a very popular program if you have these type of highways in your area. A newer one is Safe Routes to School. This program is developed to enable children, kindergarten through eighth grade, to have better access with walking and biking to school. It requires your community to have a school travel plan. And funding is also available for the planning activities. And the next application cycle will be March of 2012. So, in conclusion, crashes are up slightly. It could be from a number of different things. I don't think they're up alarmingly. The areas that we kind of like to look at a little closer and maybe try to target a little closer are motorcycles, pedestrians, bicycles, and distracted driving. ODOT has several safety programs, and all the locations on the list are locations that are eligible for funding. Contact Dave Griffith from District 4 if you'd like more information. And all the locations will be sorted by community and posted on our website, so it'll make it a lot easier for you to look at your own community. And of course, feel free to contact AMATS if you have any questions in general or about a specific location. And one more thing, we'll be accepting project applications this fall. And if you have a project that falls on the, that is on the list, it is a source of points for your project. So that concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Question. In the case of the bicycle crashes, are the is there any indication that provision of special lanes and special traffic facilities for bicycles are a factor in relationship to those, or is that something that you really can't determine?
I haven't really looked at it at that level. I would almost have to look at each you know individual crash to determine something that specific. But fortunately, we only had one fatality, but I think we are headed in the right direction. seems like the big push now is complete streets and trying to incorporate bike lanes with new projects and resurfacing. But that question's hard to answer because I just don't look at it with that much at that level. Any other questions?
No more questions for Dave? The staff is asking for an action to approve this item so that we can document the work completed. Now we entertain a motion.
So moved.
What?
Second.
A motion and a second. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion passes. Thank you very much. Moving on to item six, resolutions. Resolution 2011-15, approving the fiscal year 2011 year in completion report. Mr. Gardner, item 6A in your package.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This memo discusses the activities and expenditures for transportation planning in the AMAS area in the state fiscal year that just ended on June 30th. The purpose of the resolution is to approve the fiscal year 2011 year-end completion report so that we can transmit it to ODOT for their review. We do this annually and then meet with ODOT in September to finalize the year. Attached is a financial summary for all of the work elements scheduled during the last fiscal year. In brief, the staff budget was approximately $2 million. $1.6 million was expended with the remaining carryover of funds available for this year's use. A significant number of products and activities were accomplished during the last fiscal year, particularly the new FY2012-2015 Transportation Improvement Program. All planning work scheduled for FY2011 was completed, and the expenditures were within the budgeted amounts. The staff recommends approval of Resolution 2011-15. Are there any questions?
No questions from Mr. Gardner? I would entertain a motion to approve this resolution. So moved. A motion. We have a second.
Second.
A second. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. The motion passes. Thank you very much. Item B under 6, Resolution 2011-16 is approving the amendment number 2 to the Transportation Improvement Plan, fiscal years 2012 through 2015. Attachment 6B in your package. Mr. Bodecker.
Thank you. The first three projects, the amendment is to add safety funds for engineering in fiscal year 12, that's Prospect Street and State Route 5, both in Ravenna Township and East Summit Street in Kent. Next project is Interstate 76 in Brimfield Township. This is a new bridge project for construction in 12 using VR funds. The next three projects is also adding safety funds for engineering in fiscal year 12, 31st Street, Barberton, and then two projects on Canton Road in the village of Lakemoor. One is the reconstruction project, the other is the signal project. Graham Road, this amendment is to add, this project is to add right away in 12 using safety and MS funds. The next project is Lobby Road in Green. This project, this amendment is to add earmark funds and safety funds for engineering to 12. Ravenna Road, Old Mill Road, this amendment is to add safety funds for right-of-way in 12. Next project is I-76 in the city of Akron. And this amendment adds earmark funding for engineering in fiscal year 12. And the next project is a new bridge project on State Route 82 in Sagamore Hills Township. And this project is added to fiscal year 2015. VR funds, and the last project is also on State Route 82. The amendment is to add safety funds for engineering in fiscal year 12. Staff recommends approval of this amendment.
Any questions for Victor? Hearing none. All those, we need a motion for the approval of Resolution 2011-16.
So moved.
A motion to have a second.
Second.
We have a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. motion passes. Thank you very much. Going on to item 7, other business. Mr. Segan, would you like to introduce?
Yeah, thank you. And before I do, I did forget to mention one thing Mr. Paff reminded me of in the technical progress report is that the AMAPS annual luncheon is scheduled for Friday, October 21st. We did send out save the date postcards that hopefully all of you got. If you do have questions or didn't get one, let the staff know. But probably within the next few weeks, then we'll actually be sending out the registration forms for the meeting. So we're expecting a great turnout. I think we'll have a really good agenda, which we're still working on right now. Definitely encourage all of you to attend. And with that, launching into the last item on our agenda, I wanted to introduce Mike Shafarenko from the Civic Commons, who was going to speak to us a little bit. I don't want to steal his thunder, but just to say a couple words. Basically, the Civic Commons, which we'll go into more detail about, is predicated on the idea of having conversations between both members of the public with each other and government officials. And their website, I think, is really a great idea. It's something I'm a big supporter of and have participated in. I think it's really good because there's an online component where people can have conversations. If you go to their site, I think you'll find the level of discourse is quite a bit more sophisticated and civil than what you might see on Cleveland.com or Ohio.com if you frequent the comment sections on those websites. And I think the other thing great about it and what he's going to talk a little bit about, I think also, is then they're interested in facilitating kind of an offline component, too, of getting, so it's not just having conversations, but also giving people an opportunity to try to find out where they agree and kind of moving forward on public policy issues. And with that, I will turn it over to Mike.
Thanks, Jason. Thank you all for having me today. As Jason noted, I'm with the Civic Commons, and share a little bit with you today about what it is we do and how we try to get people more engaged and involved in community efforts. Our mission with the Civic Commons is to build conversations and connections that have the power to become informed, productive, collective civic action. As many of you probably can tell, the world is changing and changing rapidly, and the use of technology, the use of the internet, the use of mobile devices is really affecting the way people not only interact with each other, but the way they interact and try to advance their communities. Sometimes it's as radical as overthrowing the Egyptian government and creating a whole new structure. We should probably get an update on where they stand with that. And it could be, you know, people trying to use technology to affect things at the local block level, trying to put up more street lamps if their street is too dark, or trying to do other things to advance their community. So we're trying to build on that, you know, future right here, right now, and here in Northeast Ohio. So how do we turn talk into action? That's a common question. Jason noted that we have a platform for discourse. And oftentimes what we hear when I make these presentations and our team makes these presentations is, great, we've been talking for the past 100 years, and now we have something to continue talking more with. And so, but we have an elaborate formula for how we turn talk into action. It looks something like this. That's actually a joke, obviously. I'm glad many of you are smiling. What we actually have is an engagement platform. And the platform in its entirety involves community public meetings. So it involves meetings just like this, only this is a committee meeting, it's very formal, but obviously we gather people around tables just like this in restaurants and clubs and bars, wherever people want to congregate and have traditional sort of organizing meetings around, well, what do you want to do and what are the things that we can possibly do in the community? Our staff also works very hard to make a lot of relationships and partnerships with different community organizations. We often find ourselves to be network weavers. In a sense, we meet with one group that's trying to do something in one area, we meet with another group that's trying to do the exact same thing. Oftentimes they don't know about each other. And we're in a position to really bring them together and leverage and scale their efforts just by sheer being out in the community and meeting with people around different topics. And as Jason mentioned, we have an online platform. It's a platform where meetings and communities can be extended, where people can interact, where people can share information, can share links about different news stories, different resources that folks should be aware of. So there's an ongoing engagement. It's not a one-off meeting and you wait 3 months and then you have another meeting and you wait 3 months. this provides a forum for people to continue dialogue and continue to drive action around topics that they're discussing in their communities. And so that in its entirety is a platform, as we see it. So as we build the relationships and partnerships in the community, and we extend a lot of that effort online, together we can start to mobilize and drive action around different topics and issues. We really have three principles by which we operate and by which we design our website and design all of our interactions. The first is we want to educate. Not necessarily us educating or being the topic experts, but bringing in Jason, bringing in Mayor Lyons, bringing in other folks to talk about issues that they're aware of and educating others, whether it's online or in community meetings, about the topic. The second is to engage people. How do we engage people in transportation planning? How do we engage them in land use planning? How do we engage them on traffic, on crashes and reports and things of that nature, and get them involved and make them feel like they're a part of those things? It's not just in meetings like this, but everyday citizens maybe have greater awareness and engagement with those issues. And the last principle by which we design everything we do is action. How do we convert all the talk and all the resources and all the information sharing into something people can actually do? An example of that is actually happening later today. We had a conversation on our site started by a local blogger talking about sprawl. She has a very particular point of view. She's very anti-sprawl. She thinks it's bad. There's nothing good about it. We need to focus on the core city, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have other people coming to the table on our website saying, well, we should really think about it. There are many ways to look at this, and there are many resolutions to achieve benefits for both core cities, suburbs, and beyond. We have a meeting today that spawned from our conversation online. We're bringing all those people who've been a part of that conversation to a table tonight, and I believe Jason and some others are attending, to talk about, well, what can we do? What can we do that's not overly balanced towards one side or the other, but come to a consensual resolution around actions that everyday citizens can take that are to the benefit of both sides of the equation. Actually, there's multiple sides of the equation, but in this case, around this topic. At the end of the day, people ask us, well, what is it you're trying to achieve? Why does this matter? Who cares? Whatever. I use the analogy of that in this, you know, in the change that's happening in the use of tools for engagement, we aspire, in essence, to be what Intel is to computers. Intel is the little microchip that powers all our computers and essentially the universe in which we now live to some degree. We have no small dreams in hoping the Civic Commons is the tool that's used for all civic decision making at whatever level. It's a citywide level, it's a multi-county level, it's a statewide level. We hope that increasingly people start using the Civic Commons to engage each other, inform each other, and take action in their communities. How do we work with local governments? That's another question that always comes to us. What's in it for me? How do I engage my citizenry? They don't care. No amount of tools will advance that. Well, we're making attempts in that. The Port Authority of Cleveland just issued a draft strategy plan. Now, this is probably the 10th one in 5 years. Nevertheless, they want the engagement of the public around that plan. They post it on our site, and this gives them an opportunity to educate the public about what they're doing. It gives them a chance to engage the public in input on that plan and what people want to see in the lakefront, what they want to see the court doing, and that sort of thing. So it's an avenue to educate and inform the public. Our platform also offers the ability to extend meetings. So here's the new county executive in Cuyahoga County. He had a public town hall. Obviously, not everyone in Cuyahoga County could or wanted to attend on this particular evening. So we posted the video of that meeting on our site. So if citizens couldn't make it or anyone couldn't make it for whatever reason, they can watch the video and they can interact. They can add their thought. Well, I really liked what you said here, but you really should be focused on this and whatever. And the county executive's office and his team is monitoring the site to see what people are saying and engaging with them in a way that, you know, fosters more dialogue and gets people more involved in their communities. And then the next one, I hate to put Victor on the spot, but here we have a lovely video of Victor talking about the $628 million plan and how would, people in the communities of AMATS use that money. So again, it's an avenue to get input and get people engaged around this topic, and quite frankly, so they have a better understanding of what even is happening. How are their roads paved? Where are the bridges built? Why are certain roads extended and others not? This gives, again, an opportunity for the public to be more aware of how things are done and gives them a chance to be engaged. And I hope you enjoyed seeing yourself on that. on our site. So those are three ways. You can educate, engage, and get people to act on different things happening in your communities, and we're happy to help you set that up for free. We do offer services, though. It's an effort to be sustainable and continue our work with engagement. We do offer certain services and have a number of clients in this area. One is the Flats Forward Project. It's an over $2 billion project in the Flats of Cleveland, multiple stakeholders investing those $2 billion into development and skate parks and towpath trails and all sorts of great things to happen in the Flats. But a lot of that work is fragmented. Each group that's down in the Flats has its own plan. It's not integrated. A lot of issues are going unattended to. So they asked us to come in and help them engage multiple stakeholders and get them more invested in a master plan for the Flats. So as part of this project, we created a landing site for them. We shot a custom video with, this is Councilman Joel Simperman from the City of Cleveland, to talk about what are we trying to do in the Flats? What's going on? What is the history of this area? Why should you care? So we helped produce that content. There's an interactive map. You obviously can't see it because this is a static image. But there's an interactive map of the area, so citizens coming can say, well, I don't even know anything about the Flats. I've been down to a bar once or twice, but I don't know about the whole area. This gives them an opportunity to learn, well, what is this building? What is this area? What's this development project that's happening? So in theory, you could click and explore that map and see all the different things that are going on. On the right-hand side is a media feed. Anytime the Cleveland Plain Dealer or any other publication writes something about the area, for better or for worse, populates in that feed. And again, that gives the opportunity for citizens to sort of stay abreast of this one topic and know that they can come to the site and know exactly what's going on and the decisions that are being made and be involved. Furthermore, we do a lot of things offline. This is a convening of stakeholder meetings. This one happens to be in Youngstown among three different communities. But again, our staff is out there convening meetings and facilitating dialogue to get people, driving towards some sort of action. We also bring a mobile engagement studio. If you see inside of it, we come to an event. So if there's an event or a summit or a conference or a public forum or whatever, we bring this tent and we shoot people's responses right there and then. Well, what do you think about the work that AMATS is doing? What do you think about the transportation plan that's been proposed, et cetera? So it kind of creates this environment where people feel like their input is valuable. They're being recorded. Their statements are being, officially documented. It's being put up on the public site. And they feel much more vested in the engagement they're after in terms of wanting to continue to engage because they feel like their voice really matters. So that's about it. That's all I got in terms of what the Civic Commons is and what we do in the community. And there's different ways to get involved by obviously visiting our site and registering and starting a conversation. The easiest thing probably to do is just call me or shoot me an email if you have any interest in partnering with us in your community or using us for some event or some initiative that you might be driving to get different stakeholder and public input on. Thanks. Any questions? Yeah.
How are you funded?
We're funded through a foundation grant from the Knight Foundation, which has an Akron presence. They are headquartered in Miami. But we also do a series of sponsorships. So we get sponsorships from different entities to sponsor either conversations or other things on our platform. And we also do client projects. So we have a client relationship where we go and engage the community around a particular topic.
I think that this is a nonpartisan effort.
Yep.
But when you begin to organize people in a community, you take this point of view or that point of view, and you run into conflicts of points of view.
Sure.
And I wonder, is that a factor in your organization?
We take a very strong neutral stance on everything we do. Our job is to engage people and facilitate dialogue. Our job is not to say, okay, we take this point of view that you've all shared with us and we're going to go run with it. We try to drive people to a point of view so that they have one, but it's not our job to be an advocate for that point of view or to run a particular campaign on one side of an issue or another. So we do our very best internally as staff to remain what we call issue agnostic and outcome agnostic. Our job is to just bring all the voices to the table. They decide how they want to act and what they want to do. And I'm sure at some points it's perceived that we are taking maybe a certain bias, whether it's a liberal bias or conservative bias or whatever, but we always, in everything we do and say, try to retain neutrality.
Any questions for Mike?
Are you, your cover, the thing with the Port Authority, is that something that they have a contract with you to do?
No.
You're just providing coverage for that public debate?
Well, anyone can post anything they want on our site so long as it's not, you know, racist or somehow trying to demean some group or some effort, but they posted that themselves. We helped them with the technology side of it. They just said, oh, we're not sure how to press this button and click this thing over here. But other than that, they did it themselves, and their community relations person is on the site monitoring responses and responding to people. We're just providing the platform and the tools for them to be able to do that.
So like Richfield, if we're working on a planning project, we want people to know about it in the community, we could establish a presence for that on this.
Very easy. Okay. Very easy. I mean, the only thing we charge for is obviously our time, or if we need to do more than the minimum. If we were to come meet with you and help you get it set up, that's free. If you want us to go out in the community and talk to people and interview people, obviously that's more of our time that's being spent. So.
Any other questions for me?
I guess I just add, I definitely encourage everybody here to at least go to the site and check it out, because I think when you navigate through it, you'll get an even better sense of what Mike was talking about. It's really easy to create a conversation on there. If you use any sort of social networking site already, it's probably easier than Facebook. You know, it's real obvious where you go to create a conversation, and I'd say browse around and take a look at it. I think a lot of you would find it useful, you know, for civic engagement in your own community. And I know at AMATS we're planning on interacting even more and using it. Because one of our issues, a lot of you may not have ever gone to one of our Citizens Involvement Committee meetings, but we constantly struggle with how do we get people interested in what we're doing. And, you know, part of the answer is probably it's difficult because it is an inherently complex process, but I think part of it too is the days of just having a meeting at 7 o'clock on a Thursday night and expecting to get a representative sample of the public are probably not, it's probably not really realistic when you're talking about a two county area. So we're planning on working with Mike and his folks a lot more.
Mike, thanks a million.
Great, thank you.
Okay, our next meeting is scheduled for October 5th. Wednesday, October 5th, here in this room at 1:30. Ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
You're adjourned. Thank you very much.